سبحان الله حمدا لله ولا إله إلا الله.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: زكاة العلم نشر.
سبحان الله حمدا لله ولا إله إلا الله.
First of all, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate and the most merciful, we are very pleased and proud to be in the service of my dear brother, Mr. Dr. Suri. It is appropriate to thank the audience for their participation in this session. In addition, we would like to thank all the thinkers, dignitaries, and honorable brothers and participate in person or virtually. The title of Mr. Dr. Suri's speech is Shiite Spirituality in Contemporary Period and Its Relationship with Sufism. A little I would like to say about the Sufism, and after that we are listening to the Mr. Doctor speech. Sufism or Tasawwuf is a school of thought and not a religious sect, which exists both in the Shia and the Sunni faiths. Sufi is a person who believes in the principles of Sufism. Sufism has been a prominent spiritual tradition deriving influences from major world religions such as Christianity and Hinduism and now theistic religions, and contributing substantially toward the spiritual well-being of a large number of people with and out Muslim world. Such a concept may be understood by the hadith which Sufi regard to be authentic, in which our Prophet said, "I am the city of knowledge and Ali is its gate." Eminent Sufi such Ali Hujairi referred to Ali, Imam Ali, as having a very high ranking in Tasawwuf. For centuries, Sufism had no name or existed within the basic practice of Islam. The outer rules of Sharia were combined with the inner aspect of the soul. That means haqiqah. The two, inner and outer, worked complementary, and it was only much later that Sufism became identified as a separate practice and science. At this moment, we are listening to Dr. Suri's speech, inshallah, and after that, at the end, you ask your question if you'd like, and we are answering your question at the end of the session, inshallah. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bahramani. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. First of all, I want to express my sincere gratitude to the conductors of this panel, above all my dear friends Ahmad Shakiri Nejad and Habib Qahramani. As it has already announced, the topic of my talk is Shiite spirituality in the contemporary period and its relationship with Sufism. Before diving into the discussion, it's notable that I have enjoyed from the comments of my friends Shakir Nejad and Taha Abdullahi in preparing the paper of this lecture, and I have to thank them again. My discussion consists of a brief introduction and three main parts. In the recent years, the term Shiite spirituality has been used frequently in academic literature. By the way of example, Carl Ernst used the term the spirituality of Shiism in his book titled Following Muhammad. Of course, one may even claim that the in-question term is coined by the Western scholars, but I'm not yet sure about that. The first question that arises here is that what is called Shiite spirituality? And what do we mean by Shiite Sufism? If Shiite spirituality has a relationship with Shiite Sufism or Shiite Irfan, what is this relationship? And if Shiite spirituality has nothing to do with these two terms, then what is Shiite spirituality? Shedding light on the problem, I will approach this question from a historical perspective, and I will try to summarize the extensive history of the relationship between Shiism and Sufism quite briefly. The first part, a brief of the relationship between Shiism and Sufism, Irfan and spirituality. Perhaps it was at the end of the 3rd Hijri 9th AD century that the word Sufism, in Arabic at-tasawwuf, was gradually used by the first time in Baghdad, nowadays in Iraq. At first, this term was used only by the Baghdadis, and especially for Junayd, the great Sufi of Baghdad, who died in 910, and his students. But by the end of the 11th century, the term Sufism was used all over the Islamic world, replacing other similar alternative terms. Sufism eventually transformed to a term referring to any type of spirituality in the Islamic world. It seems that until about the 13th century, those who were officially called Shias and mainly lived in some Iraqi, Lebanese and Iranian cities had no connection with Sufism. In fact, it can be said that Sufism and Shiism continued their own path as two distinct constitutions for many centuries. The fortified barrier between Shiism and Sufism began to collapsing around 7th or 8th century in Hijri or 13th and 14th century AD, and Shiism and Sufism intersected in some points. Although these connections were empathetic and friendly, they were quite scarce. Hence, they did not arouse much sensitivity among the Shiite scholars, ulama, who were usually opposed to Sufism afterwards. But these friendly relations between Sufism and Shiism, as Hafez of Shiraz puts after forward, خوش درخشید ولی دولت مستعجل بود, shown brightly but briefly. In the first year of the 16th century, an important event happened in Persia, nowadays Iran. The Safavids came to power, and declared Shiism as the official denomination of the country. The Safavids themselves were originally a Sunni Sufi order, Tariqa, and in a gradual transformation, they converted to Shiism. Perhaps no one thought that the most prominent Sufi order in Iran of that day, when it came to power, would cause an enmity between Sufism and Shiism. The story of the agreement and opposition of Shiite scholars with Sufism is a multidimensional problem. At the moment, I only point out that as a result of these conflicts, the term Sufism gradually became a term with a negative connotation, and the Shiite scholars who were inclined towards Sufism preferred to use the term mysticism or Irfan instead to preserve themselves from potential threats. At the both theoretical and practical levels, sometimes explicitly and sometimes implicitly, they expressed that Sufism is very different from Irfan, and that what we are looking for is Irfan, not Sufism. Therefore, Irfan took the place of Sufism in Shiite scientific circles in Iran. But from the term Irfan to the term Shiite Irfan, a very long way had to be traveled. It took several centuries until finally, a few decades ago, the term Shiite Irfan was born. Shiite Irfan opened its place so quickly that today, perhaps no one believes that it's a relatively new term. It seems that those who used the term Irfan and popularized it in the last few decades intended to provide a suitable alternative to Sufism. In doing so, they tried to eliminate the so-called unorthodox or non-Shiite elements of Sufism, from Sufism, which were not possible to live in the Shiite society like Iran. For example, in the works of this group, we see that some aspects of Sufism, such as initiation into an order, into a tariqa, or the relationship between disciple and a master, or performing sama, Sufi dance, are intentionally excluded from Irfan. They also try to associate the Shiite Irfan to or refined Sufism with Ahl Bayt, the household of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be with them. And stranger than the term Shiite Irfan is the term Shiite spirituality. If we assume that a few decades ago someone heard Shiite Irfan, he or she could more or less make sense of it. But at the moment, if the same person hears the term Shiite spirituality, he or she probably would not understand anything from it, and it would not bring anything to mind. In the same way, if someone used the term Shiite Irfan 100 years ago, his or her audience would still not understand anything. And it was the case with Shiite Sufism a few centuries ago. I like to conclude this brief discussion in the first part of my talk with the point that Sufism, Shiism relation has gone through several stages throughout history. These two phenomena had no connection at first. Then the Sufism was accepted among some Shiites, or to be more precise, some of the Sufi orders first accepted the 12 Imams, and then after a while they converted to Shiism. This was the first stage. In the second stage, the Safavid Shiite government came to power in Iran, and in the conflict between Shiite Sufis and Shiite scholars, ulama, Sufism gradually took a negative connotation and transformed into Irfan. In the third stage, which belongs to the post-revolutionary era, Irfan gave way to Shiite Irfan. And finally, in the last few years, Shiite Irfan also left, and now Shiite spirituality is taking its place. It is as if the word Irfan is also suffering from the fate of the word Sufism. This was my first part. The second part, reconsidering Shiite Sufism relation. In this part, I wish to put forward my own interpretation of the problem. In the first part of my speech, I brought a relatively classic view of the relationship between Sufism and Shiism into light, which is more or less popular among researchers who do research into Sufism and Shiism. And in this part of the speech, I want to shed light on the problem using Sayyid Haydar Amuli's insights. Sayyid Haydar Amuli, who lived in the 13th century, famously expressed in his masterpiece Jamul Asrar wa Manba'ul Anwar that there are two kinds of Shiites. One who limits her or his religion to a set of outward knowledge, and one who is an approved believer, al-mu'min al-mumtahan. Amuli believes that this Shiite, the second Shia, and the true Sufi are identical. Although this claim could sound strange at the first glance, it is possible to make sense of it, and this is what I try to do it here briefly. By the matter of fact that a large number of Sufis gradually felt under the spiritual authority of 12 Shiite Imams after the fall of the Abbasid Caliphate in Baghdad, these, who we called 12 Sunnis by some Iranian scholars, were Sunni in terms of jurisprudence and theology, in Arabic, fil-fiqh wal-kalam. But at the same time, they recognized the 12 Imams as the inner successors of the Prophet Muhammad and the founders of Sufism. A large number of these 12 Sunnis, abandoned Sunni jurisprudence and theology in a relatively short period of time and officially became Shiites. Notably, even in that period, when these Sufis were officially Sunni, they were spiritually dependent of the first Imam, Imam Ali alayhi salam. The question is now, did this event which have started with the fall of the Abbasid Caliphate in the middle of the 13th century occurred spontaneously and without any previous context among Sufis, or did it rooted in the Sufism itself? As I have discussed in one of my recent researches titled Image of Shiite Imams in the Texts of Asceticism and Early Sufism, I came to the conclusion that none of these events happened suddenly and without context, but all of them are rooted deeply in the formative period of Sufism. It is natural that in this short time it's not possible to mention all the evidences that proves this claim. But I would like just to point out that in addition to the fact that almost all Sufi orders throughout history have accepted Imam Ali, alayhi salam, as the head of the Sufis, for example, as Mustamli of Bukhara in his important but unfortunately less known commentary of Kitabul Ta'arruf says, Ali Sare Arifan Ast, means Ali is the head of the Sufis, and the founder, and they considered him the founder of Sufi orders. Besides these, there are evidences in the noble Sufi ancient works, such as Qut al-Qulub, written by Abu Talib Makki, and Kitab al-Luma' fi al-Tasawuf, written by Sarraj Tusi, that from the very formative period of Sufism, Sufi's view of Ali, of Imam Ali and his children, were fundamentally and completely different from their attitude towards other companions of the Prophet Muhammad. But due to the political and religious conditions, Sufis have concealed their views in a way which were only recognizable for the insiders, not the outsiders. I deliberately did not claim that Sufism was close to Shiite in its origins, but I said that it was close to the 12 Imams, and there are differences between 12 Imams and Shiites. It seems that both Sufis and Shiites took their intellectual foundations from the 12 Imams, but due to political, social, and religious reasons, these two groups were separated from each other. It also seems that at least an important branch of Sufis lived in a situation where they could not freely talk about their relationship with the Imams until the fall of the Abbasid Caliphate. But when this caliphate fell and the religious authority of the Abbasid was destroyed, the Sufis, or this branch of Sufis, found the possibility to freely express themselves. Therefore, I would like to conclude from my explanations in this second part that Sufism, with all its ups and downs, is attributed to Imam Ali alayhi salam and his offspring, and originated from them. Just as Shiism, with all its ups and downs, is attributed to Imam Ali alayhi salam and his offspring, and originated from them. And we should not repeat the historical mistake in the Safavid era and consider Sufism outside of the school of Ahlul Bayt. This was the second part of my speech and the last part. The third part, a proposal. First of all, I am well aware that my claim is more revolutionary than to be accepted immediately. But of course, I think there are enough evidences for it. It can be claimed that Sufism is the most important and influential aspect of Islamic civilization that is still alive, and its influence is increasing day by day in other modern world. But it is not the case with so-called Shiite spirituality. Sufism is a long-lasting discipline of rituals rooted in the Holy Quran and Hadith. For example, compare what is said about God's remembrance, in Arabic, al-Zikr, in the Holy Quran, with the literature of Zikr, or God's remembrance, and its rules and customs in Sufism, to see how much the Sufis have enriched its content during several centuries of mystical experiences and have created a discipline for it. A discipline that does not exist in Shiite spirituality or Shiite Irfan if it is defined outside of Sufism. Finally, in view of what I have said, I would like to make a suggestion for the studies of Shiite spirituality. My suggestion is that Shiite spirituality should look at the heritage of Sufism as its past heritage and benefit from it. Of course, my intention is not accept it is not accept what is included in Sufism completely. I mean that Shiite spirituality should consider this great heritage as a source of inspiration, both at the practical and theoretical level. We should not deprive ourselves from such a rich tradition, even though some aspects of it could be problematic, as the Holy Quran says, فَبَشِّرْ عِبَادِ الَّذِينَ يَسْتَمِعُونَ الْقَوْلِ فَيَتَّبِعُونَ أَحْسَنَهُ أُولَٰئِكَ الَّذِينَ هَدَاهُمُ اللَّهُ وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمْ أُولُو الْأَلْبَابِ. O Prophet, give good news to my servants who listen to what is said, then follow what is most beautiful of it, or follow what is best. It is they whom God has guided. It is they who are the possessors of intellect, aql. What is wrong with regard to Sufism if we follow this Quranic verse and take its positive aspects and leave its negative aspects? Thank you again to all dear friends who listened to my words. May God guide us to the right path. خدایا چنان کن سرانجام کار تو خوشنود باشی یا ما رستگار.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dr. Suri, from your lecture, very beautiful and very significant. And the audience, in person or virtually, if you have any question, we are at your services. Virtually, Mr.?
Many persons.
Many persons, but they have I think some questions. Virtually, my friend and dignitaries, if you have any question, we are at your services. At first,
it's very controversial, and we don't. I actually already speak with this point of view with you. It's very controversial. We don't know how we can start and evaluate it. But I think in conclusion, we should add something else. For example, maybe these actually developing concept is not related to Sufism. Maybe we should not get back to the Sufism. Maybe it's beyond Sufism and Shia spirituality is beyond them something else, and we should get back to it. But your argument is very controversial, and I want to think more about it. Maybe it's a new phase in the study Shia spirituality in a historical way. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Actually, I don't want you to get back to the Sufism completely. I say Sufi heritage is a big heritage, and we can make use of the advantages of it and abandon the disadvantages of it. Especially because we, as Shiite people, should have the authority for spiritual researches. And if we prove that these huge heritage belongs to Ahle Bayt, it makes the way paved for us. It's more easier for us to use something from outsiders. When we consider Sufism as our heritage, we can make use of it comfortably and more easier.
I think we should see this scenario in another way. For example, you can imagine we have some source and two kind of disciples using this source, and between them we have some relationship. One sect of disciples is Shia followers, and one sect is the Sufi followers, and in some period they fight each other, in some period they make friendship between each other. But it's another thing. We are speaking about concepts, not the reality. With concepts we want to get familiar with the reality. It's not the reality. We want to look at the reality with this concept. I think in your discussion we mixed these two levels, reality and concept we want to speak about. We have some actually development in the concept. Maybe it's not related to the reality. And the second point is that as I said, we maybe have something beyond these two groups, and with this concept we want to get closer to that reality. Maybe in some aspect we can use from the tradition of Sufism, maybe not. Maybe we can use from the historical line of these conflict and friendship between them, maybe. But it's not our realm to think. Our realm for thinking is the realm of concept. I think we have lots of another cause when we want to think why we get rid of the concept of the Shia Sufism, going to Shia Irfan, and now we are going to the Shia spirituality. Maybe it's not actually related to the fact that between those groups are occurred. Maybe something else occurred out of this discussion and its impact in this discussion. I think we should think about it more. But your argument is very useful for thinking in this period of study of spirituality. Thank you so much.
When I see what is happening among us, among the people who do researches about Shiite spirituality, or who want to have a new spirituality for the generations, I saw some of them are try to escape from the past, and deprive themselves from what he have. Here I just wanted to prove that we can consider the case in another way, and look at this heritage as ourselves. And, it's not need to invent the wheel from the once more, because if we deprive ourselves from this great heritage, we have to start once again. I just want to say that it's good for us to benefit from this heritage and prove that it's not something from outsiders. We ourselves have contributed in making this heritage, and that's all.
Thank you. Any other question? I would like to ask a question.
Yes,
is it possible?
Of course.
To answer. Thank you. What's your opinion about Hallaj al-Sufi?
You know, it's a very controversial issue during the history, and at least even among the Sufis themselves, there were three opinions about him. Some people, some Sufis said, he denied him and said he was an heterodox of
heresy
of the Orthodox of Sufism. And some people know said no, he was a very great wali of God, and it's famous that one of the very famous Sufis that Al-Hallaj Alamun Rabbani. And the third group said we cannot say anything about Hallaj, it's a very controversial
issue.
Thank you,
very good.
This was among the Sufis. But among the Shia scholars, until the time of Khaja Nasiruddin Tusi, all of the Shiite ulamas who spoke about Hallaj, they opposed him. But Khaja Nasiruddin Tusi was the first Shia alim who wrote about Hallaj and made good comments about his words and said, these words has good meaning and we can make a correct sense of them. After Khwaja Nasir, still we have two opinions about Hallaj among Shiite scholars. The people who have Sufi tendency, actually it's natural to look at Hallaj as a saint and as a big arif, and the other now.
Thank you for your clarification. Very good, excellent lecture from my brother Dr. Suri, and thank you for your participation. If you have any question.
Thank you so much for your good lecture about Sufism and Shia thinking. I have two questions, actually. One is about newly sources that take your suggestion about make some bridges between Shia as a name, Shia fiqh and Shia Sufism. Is there any source, new source that we study that they attempt to show us these are the positive elements of Sufism and these are the negative elements of them? Can you name some sources?
Actually, I don't remember anything about this. Perhaps Mr. Shakir Ajat is
I think you have to write.
I think it's our duty to dive into these kinds of discussions. But actually, I myself consider all of the terms I spoke about them, from Sufism to Shiite spirituality, is, I think, the development of the same phenomenon, and because of that, I arrived to this point, as I told you in my speech. I think all of these terms are the same thing, but during a history, and each of them has the development, and because of this development, the name has been changed. Mm. What about your question about the relationship between fiqh and Sufism? I have no idea.
Yeah. Today in moral philosophy, we have two kind of thinkers. One kind belongs to the thinkers who think about justice and rules, and another kind of thinkers, are who think about careful, to be careless and to be lawful, like people, love people, love your neighbors, like all human beings. I think these two kind are at the end of the at the line. In one end, we saw justice thinker, and in the another line, we saw beneficence thinkers or care thinkers. And we cannot make them agree with each other. I think God created two kinds of persons, two kinds of human beings. One kind is belongs to be careful about all nature, all things, and one kind is belongs to whom think about justice and rules. Sufism and Irfan, or whatever you name, spirituality, you can, by the fear of justice thinkers that now in fiqh, in jurisprudence, they are belongs to jurisprudence. They think about rules, about lines and justice. By the, you can refrain from them and name anything else to yourself. To I am not Sufi. I am Arif. Okay, I am not Arif. I am spiritual. No, you belong to another kind of creatures that God created. And I think in our world, we need both of them. In some areas, we have to refer to justice thinkers and rulers and jurisprudence makers. And in some cases, in some other needs, we have to refer to the love thinkers and careful thinkers, beneficial thinkers like Sufism.
It's good. I have no exact idea about this, and I never thought about this to understand or to make my opinion. But even among the people who are attributed to Sufism, there are these two kinds of people you mentioned. Some of them are eager to pay attention to the theoretical matters, as we see in the followers of Ibn Arabi, the Akbarian order or the Akbarian tradition. And others, we see that they are eager to help people and manifest their love to the creations.
Yeah, Sufism. Also, we can have some differences, but by wholly understanding of them, they belong to this school, the school of careful. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil faraja ali Muhammad. Allah.